Welcome to Partners for Progressive Israel's Conversation with Israel and Palestine podcast. I am your host, Maya Haber. Today we spoke with Rami Hod, the Executive Director of the Social Economic Academy, about the challenges facing the Israeli left, the social protest movement, and why it gives him hope for the future of Israel.
The good news, and there is very good news, is that the social justice movement is emerging in response to Netanyahu neoliberal policies, and that in recent years, more than ever, Israelis are getting organized in their communities, joining labor unions in the highest numbers ever, and are becoming much more progressive on social and economic issues. A process that is mostly ignored by people outside Israel, but in my eyes, this process is a real source of optimism and most important trend we must strengthen as people who deeply care about the future of Israel.
But before we begin the conversation, for those of you who haven't heard of it, the Social and Economic Academy is a central player in the Israeli social movement. It is a non-profit organization, a community of experienced organizers and academics who give students of economics, labor leaders, and local communities vital knowledge and know-how on social and economic issues. The Academy uses education and training processes to foster grassroots communities and labor organizing dedicated to social change. Rami, thank you so much for being with us. Rami, what would you say is the biggest challenge facing the Israeli left today?
We all know that the right has been the dominant political force in Israel for far too long. But I'd like to add that in the past 5 years, we are witnessing a social and economic turn in Israel, in Israeli society and politics. Security is still, of course, very important for all the citizens of Israel, but more people than ever are demanding a greater equality and a fairer society for themselves and their children. As I found out in 2 speaking tours in the U.S. that I gave last year, this political shift has gone unnoticed by a lot of people, organizations, and foundations in the United States that care about the future in Israel and would like to see a progressive change happening. The debate over Israel in the U.S. with BDS supporters from one side and the conservative right on the other requires progressive to develop new strategies that can bring change. This is what I believe, of course. The last Knesset election in 2015 demonstrated perfectly what is the biggest challenge that the Israeli progressive camp has. The results show that the left won in the highest numbers since 1999 in the upper middle classes communities all over Israel. The problem is that the right won in all the other places. It is actually the same story for the left since Rabin in 1992. Besides one election in 2006, when Amir Peretz, the then leader of labor, won in many middle-low-income communities.
But what about V15, the Israeli voter mobilization project, which used Obama campaign methods to put a center-left coalition into power and was so active in the 2015 election?
The V15 campaign, which did a great job in the upper middle class cities, increasing voting turnout very effectively, has demonstrated the same problem. We doubled our power in Tel Aviv and achieved extraordinary results in upper middle class places. But it was almost meaningless since we lost everywhere else.
So what you seem to be saying is that the Israeli left needs to build new constituencies, particularly among lower and middle income communities. It simply has no other way of winning elections ever if it doesn't build its base in a different way. But how can we make sure that they work for progressive causes?
This is the most crucial question one has to address while asking how to bring change in Israel. It's impossible to implement our policies regarding to a state solution, social justice, and pluralistic Judaism without taking this mission very seriously. And I believe that one of the most effective strategies to build new constituencies and expand our political camp is by organizing and mobilizing people for social justice. I would like to explain why, because I know that this isn't the most dominant answer that some progressives in the U.S. and from the Jewish community usually hear about Israel. There are a few reasons why we should integrate social issues into the conversation between like-minded people from Israel and the U.S. One of the reasons of the decline in progressive values in Israel is the widening inequality. The crisis of what is called liberal Zionism is very much related to the fact that Israel has become one of the most unequal societies in the developed world. While inequality is a problem everywhere, for a society that lives in a conflict and suffers from tension among its groups, inequality is a real threat. If we wish to fight racism and promote peaceful solutions, we can't do it without fighting inequality within Israel. It is directly addressed to issues of peace, equality, and pluralistic Judaism. We need to talk about the social question because it's impossible to change Israel without changing the social conditions in which Israelis live and develop their political perspective. Changing Israel is not a campaign goal or a PR move. It demands real work with people who live their social and economic problems. The last reason why the social question is so fundamental in the future of Israeli society and politics, and in the future of the progressive camp and liberal Zionism, is that since the social protest of 2011, there is a growing social justice movement in Israel. Actually, the biggest success that the progressive camp has had in the past 10 years is that the Israeli public is moving to the left on social and economic issues. Before I describe the growing social justice movement and why I think that organizing for social justice is the most important source of optimism in Israel today, I would like to give a few words on how the social and economic policy of the right has spurred, in many ways, the current demand for a fairer and more equal society in Israel demands. In one sentence, what happened is that Israel have lost its social balance. The first generation of the country have built a decent social security system, free public education, good public health, good public universities, public and affordable housing for new immigrants, a labor system that is based on a dialogue between organized labor and the industry. This is how the Israeli middle class was created. These are the foundations of Israel's famous economic miracle. Yes, people were talented enough to start their own business. They were entrepreneurs. We have a flourishing IT system. We are a nation of investors. But all these people received decent social services, a safety net, good public institutions that gave them opportunities. Of course, it wasn't even close to perfect. The Israeli welfare state did exclude some groups, mostly the Israeli Arabs. But the Israeli welfare state and the social institutions that a new and immigrant state has built is one of the biggest successes in modern history. I truly believe in it. Since the 80s, most of the government have changed this balance between a free market with a progressive welfare state that has created this Israeli middle class. Now, it's important to say that the exposure to Israeli market, to globalization, to international investment, and to foreign capital was a positive thing. It helped us to achieve more growth and to bring knowledge-based industries, mostly high-tech, to Israel. Yitzhak Rabin did all that. He promoted some economic liberalization in some aspects, but in the same time, he invested in education, health, job, infrastructure. This balance, as you probably know, was also good for peace. The problem is that the Israeli right, led by Netanyahu, has adopted the most extreme version of trickle-down economic policies that weakened our public institutions and created the most unequal society in the developed world after Mexico and Chile, more than the United States, by the way. That is why it's always funny to hear people talking about how Netanyahu is a deep and a believer in the status quo. Of course, it's true regarding the conflict, but Netanyahu has unfortunately changed the Israeli society and economics very dramatically. The right has cut taxes on the 1% and on big corporations. And the public expenditures on health, education has been slashed, leading to increased spending on private services that were once given by the state. The right-wing and the government moved more than 10% of the workers in Israel to subcontracting. This is the highest number among developed world. One of every three children in Israel lives under the poverty line. 20% of the families lives in poverty, an increase in working poor over the past years. Median income per individual in Israel is $18,000 a year. The average income per individual is $30,000. Wages have been stagnated. It's always impossible to raise a family on these wages. It takes 140 salaries to buy a house in Israel, as opposed to 60 in the United States. This is the background for the social protest of 2011 and of the current social revival happening in Israel. My generation, which can be called the Israeli version of millennials, we deeply appreciate the advantage of the market, of new opportunities and globalization. We still appreciate it very much, by the way. But in 2011, we began to understand that the deal is not working. We are doing exactly what we should do, but still we find it very hard to live a decent life in Israel. In 2011, we actually demonstrated against two groups. One is the right-wing government. We implemented these policies that I mentioned before. But the second is our parents, the second generation of the country, middle-class Israelis, that did almost nothing when the right-wing government adopted the most extreme version of capitalism to Israel. Now, it's extremely important to understand that although the right, led by Netanyahu, is responsible for most of this social and economic shift, most of the progressive camp was left without an answer. Besides some politicians, intellectuals, and social organizations, the truth is there wasn't really a coherent progressive alternative to these policies. So in the same time that the majority of Israelis saw their wages stagnate, their welfare stipends cut by half, and their social conditions changing, the dominant answer by the majority of the left was this: after we will end a conflict with the Palestinians, we will deal with the social problem. The narrative of the right that helped to win many elections, unfortunately, was this: because of security problems, we must make cuts in education, health, and welfare. The progressive camp left without an answer. Up until recent years, if you ask someone in the street what is the difference between left and right regarding social and economic policies, meaning his daily life, he would have no answer. 2011 has changed all of this. The good news, and there is very good news, is that the social justice movement is emerging in response to Netanyahu neoliberal policies, and that in recent years, more than ever, Israelis are getting organized in their communities, joining labor unions in the highest numbers ever, and are becoming much more progressive on social and economic issues. The organizing trend is a grassroots quiet revolution taking place in Israel since 2011, a process that is mostly ignored by people outside Israel, but in my eyes, this process is a real source of optimism and most important trend we must strengthened as people who deeply care about the future of Israel.
Can you give us a few examples of the successes of this silent revolution?
On education, parents organized and won free education from age 3. Classroom size was reduced as a result of a big parents mobilization. Grassroots local organizations for a reallocation of local resources. Many actions to safeguard the rights of residents to achieve transparency and local budgets. In 2013, we have seen the first ever ultra-Orthodox women's party to run for a seat in an ultra-Orthodox city in Israel. Ethiopian Jews, as you know, went out to the street this year and demanding equality. The last government tried to privatize some elements in our great public health system. We managed to stop it by a big public struggle and even expanded some treatments and included it in the public insurance. A TV series called The Civil Platter had over 2.5 million views. The series explained in a very accessible language how the right-wing economic policies have expanded inequality and poverty rate. Again, 2.5 million views out of a population of 8 million. Labor organizing is the most growing field of social change in Israel today. More than 150,000 workers have organized in recent years, primarily in lower wage occupations. Daycare workers, janitors, security guards, bus drivers, social workers, cell phone company workers, and even McDonald's workers. Jews and Arabs organizing together in the highest numbers than ever in labor unions. This past month, just to give a short example, we at the Social Economic Academy have been running leadership and courses for Jewish and Arab bus drivers, working with them not only on progressive practices, but also on progressive ideas. Despite the political conflict between Jews and Arabs, they are united around a Palestinian chair, an Arab Israeli who was elected to lead the union. There are many other examples of similar groups of workers and communities working together for progressive causes with the assistance of progressive organizations. So this is exactly the kind of constituency building that I mentioned before. Despite the many problems that we have, despite the crisis of liberal Zionism, this is the kind of progressive activism that is happening now in Israeli left more than ever. I believe that by stimulating and strengthening this process, by creating more organizing efforts and more active group of citizens fighting for social and economic justice, educated on progressive ideas, we can expand our progressive camp and be more effective.
Rami, you seem to be suggesting that there is a significant difference between the philanthropic strategies of progressive and conservative American Jews and that somehow progressive Israelis and progressive American Jews should work together to achieve something. What are the differences between progressive and conservative strategies and how do they manifest themselves on the ground?
After the murder of Yitzhak Rabin, the settlers, they understood that they have a problem. And they understood that in order to be the dominant in the political force in Israel, which they are today, they have to talk with the regular Israelis, with the mainstream Israeli who lives in Petah Tikva, in Chulon, in Chedera, in Be'er Sheva, and in Haifa. The conservative right has been extremely effective in helping the Israeli right to build strong social institutions, think tanks, and grassroots organizations that will help the right to spread his ideas. So we have many think tanks that are spreading right-wing ideology, both on issues of national security and on social issues that are heavily funded by conservatives in the United States. We have lots of grassroots local initiative. We have settlers, actually, I don't know if you heard about it, what we called garinim toraniim. Many settlers are moving, not many settlers, but I would say small groups, but very effective, are moving from the settlements to middle and lower classes and communities within Israel in order to try and spread their message. I would say that the philanthropic strategy of the right is more focused on the long term. I think that US progressives doing amazing work in helping us here in the progressive camp in Israel in bringing new ideas and practices. But I think that we have, from what I saw, I think that we all should understand that we have a long-term mission. I would like us to win an election. I think that we should have very effective political and campaigns before election. But in order to change the Israeli society, I would say that we should learn from the long-term and strategy of the right and build think tanks, social organizations working on the ground with Israelis on organizing and mobilization on progressive causes. And we should be patient. Again, I think that we should win, but I think that we should understand that the problems of the left are very fundamental. We should build new constituencies. And in order to build new constituencies, we should build strong institutions, both on training, on education, on leadership development, that will help us to spread our message. Another thing that is related to your question, Maya, is that we have many non-political NGOs in Israel that are doing very important and philanthropic work on welfare and educational issues. But I think that our social organizations, our NGOs that are mostly funded by the U.S. has a political mission. It's not a partisan issue. We can't support labor or merit or the other organization, both because it's not legal, and second, because it's not really our mission. We should work with the public and not on politics. But we should be more political in a sense that we should educate and train the people that we work with to believe in a progressive and values, and we should be more open about our politics and saying, yes, we are political, we are social organizations, but we believe that Israel should be more progressive. And the right has been much more open about its politics. Social organizations on the right are usually, they are proud to say that they are affiliated with the right and a political camp. Again, I'm not talking about parties, but about the general concept of the right political camp. So this, I would say, two main differences.
There is a sense that the right controls everything in Israel at the moment. How do you plan to change that? How do you take over the military and the Ministry of Education and the bureaucracy?
The question is how the right came to a position when he has so many people, so many government officials in the army, in a pre-military academy. Is it a force of nature? Did it happen just one day because the Gantz wanted it to happen? No, the right had a political plan. After the assassination of Rabin and after the disengagement plan when Israel went out from Gaza, the settlements movement and the Israeli right was very weak, was extremely weak. It was more weak then than the Israeli left is weak now. We should remember that the gap between the political blocs in Israel is very minor. I wouldn't say that the right is extremely dominant in Israel. It's not in an hegemonic status. Yeah, it's the dominant and the political force in Israel, but I wouldn't do what, unfortunately, many people outside Israel usually do and portray the situation as if the right is hegemonic and is controlling everywhere because it's simply not true, but it is part of a political plan. And we should also have a political plan, and being political and having the right people in the right places. For instance, we have a we have one of our leading programs in the Social Economic Academy is called Progressive Economics. What we do is that we provide a scholarship to 40 students of economics in the Hebrew University and in Tel Aviv University, and we train them to be a part of the public sector and to enter the Ministry of Finance to think in a progressive way. For instance, we work with labor leaders in unions of janitors, daycare workers, and security guards, and many bus companies that I mentioned before, in order to educate and train on progressive values. So this is just two examples, and you have, of course, many other great social organizations who are also working on training and education with different groups. And of course, we should connect it with the political narrative of the progressive camp. I think that our mission, and we try to do it every day in the Social Economic Academy, is to connect what is happening in public transportation in a small city in the north with the wider policy of the right-wing government, and to connect the very high numbers of students in a class in Israel, the classes are very crowded, to the wider social economic policy, yes, and to connect the money that is being spent in the settlements with the social issues in Israel. So yes, we should implement our political narrative and not only doing social work, which is important, but this is not the work that I believe in. I believe that we should be very political, even when we organize workers and communities.
Rami, you seem to be suggesting that there is a vacuum of organizations, that there aren't enough think tanks. Is the vacuum only because the organizations that we have are not sufficiently political, according to you, or is there an actual vacuum of organizations?
I'm not only talking about think tanks. This is only one aspect. I'm mostly talking about social organizations that are working with people on organizing on the ground, in communities, in workplaces. This is, I would say, the biggest vacuum that we have in the Israel left. We have lots of organizations that are spreading their messages in Facebook, on the media, but the organizations that are doing work on the ground and are trying to change what people think by speaking with them and by organizing them and by trying to mobilizing them, I think that this is what needs to be done. But I think that all the social organizations and the foundations need to think in a way that will help us to make a constituency building. This is the vacuum. More organizations that are working on the ground with Israelis, with people. And yes, as you mentioned, I do think that some of the organizations that we have that are doing a very good work should be more political. When we work with leaderships of unions, we don't only provide them with the tools to organizing. Of course, we are giving them very good strategic tool how to be more effective as union leaders. But we also talk about the wider political question, about progressive ideas. I think this is the dot that we have to connect.
To what extent would you say Ayelet Shaked's NGO law, which she calls the transparency law, which would require NGOs to give details of overseas donations in all their official publications, to what extent is that a challenge to NGO work and your work in particular?
The Israeli and human rights organizations are under attack. We should be in total solidarity with them, even for us in the social justice world, which I think that the continuous of the occupation is the number one problem that Israeli faces. And we don't deal with it directly. I think that we are dealing with it quite effectively in the social justice world, because we're mobilizing people for social justice, and we help them to also be more progressive regarding other issues. But I think that what you mentioned is very dangerous. But in the same time, and I know it will, the human rights bill is, this okay. is not a real issue. In the same days, in the same week that the budget of the settlements was increased, that the poverty, that some NGOs, when they released their recent finding regarding poverty rates in Israel, and the right is losing in its security narrative because Israel is not secure right now. In the same time that the right is losing points on security and social issues, suddenly there is the NGO bill. I know that some people in the government would like to pass this bill, but we have a narrative of victims. We like to, not we, but some of the people in the progressive camp like to say that we are under attack. Yes, we are under attack. The government doesn't like the human rights organizations who are doing very, very, very important work, which helps Israel to still being a democracy, but we should be proactive. We should be proactive and speak with the Israeli public, not as victims of the government. So there is no fine obstacles. NGOs in Israel, like the Social Economic Academy, and like most of the NGOs that I know, are under all the legal... we work according to the law. We accept funding from foundations. None of us are connected to a certain party, of course, and we don't even have this ambition, and we work with people on issues. So there are no obstacles regarding funding. There is obstacle regarding the narrative. And I think this is a huge challenge, which is, I think that we have a challenge to explain to our friends who care about Israel and who donate to Israel how social justice work is crucial for building a progressive camp. This is the challenge that we have. It's a narrative. It's an issue of narrative. And how we should learn from the success stories. Again, the biggest success the Israeli left in recent years is that Israelis have become more and critical, more open, and more and progressive on social economic issues. The question is, how can we use this shift and to translate it to social change? And I think that we have lots of work to do. And I'm quite optimistic. I think that we have many success stories, and I see it in my daily work, that communities and workers are getting organized in very big numbers, and people, more than ever, I think, more than I can remember, specifically, people do believe that they have the ability to change their lives. The minimum wage was increased twice during the last year. 150,000 workers, which is about 7% of the workers that weren't organized before in labor unions, have joined in labor unions. This is a big thing that is happening in Israel. So I believe that this is the opportunity. And progressives in the United States, I think they have many paths and many ways to help, not only in funding. For instance, we have a delegation of the teacher leaders that will be coming to New York and to Philadelphia for joint program that we initiated together with the American Federation of Teachers. And these teachers will learn how the American Federation of Teachers are doing and the campaigns and on the ground against the privatization of education. Yeah, so this is, you know, it's not only funding. It's very important to emphasize this. It's also bringing people that are doing similar work together and to learn from each other.
You've been listening to Rami Hod, the Executive Director of Social and Economic Academy, brought to you by Partners for Progressive Israel. Find out more about Partners for Progressive Israel at progressiveisrael.org and subscribe to our conversation with Israel and Palestine on iTunes. This is your host, Maya Haber. Until next time.